Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everybody, welcome to another new episode of Undying Light. I'm your host, Pastor Alex, and we are back at it once again with another new episode with you, working ourselves through the Olivet Discourse, Matthew chapter 24. The abomination of desolation is on tap for tonight, but I'm going to do something I don't normally do on the show, and I'm going to do a throwback to a show that I recorded a couple of years ago, and I want to kind of just let this one go. It's a longer episode. We covered a lot of doctrine, a lot of topics. We looked at a couple different views, if you would, from Mark 13, Luke 21, and we talked about a lot of different things. My views have not changed since that episode, and I think this would be helpful for you to just revisit this classic, if you would. It is a classic because it's a couple years old now, but I want to really just reiterate that this episode was recorded in January of 2021, so there might be a few things that I refer to in that time period, but you can just ignore that. But the content and the direction of the episode, the material covered, my views have not changed, and I want to just use this time for some personal development, some personal growth, and some other things that I'm working on. And so I'm going to probably call back to some of these earlier episodes as we work through Matthew 24 and 25, just to give myself that little bit of a mental break, if you would. So just ask for some prayers as I'm continuing on with all of the things, especially leading into the season of Easter here that is coming up in a couple weeks. So I much appreciate everybody listening to this, and I hope you guys enjoy this week's episode. So like I said, just take the content and disregard all of the extra stuff that I say in there. I try to cut out as much as I can to make it really flow well. So here is the abomination of desolation.
So the abomination of desolation started in the 15th verse of the 24th chapter of Matthew. Now remember, this runs concurrently alongside Mark 13 and Luke 21. So if you would like to look at those as references, which we will actually probably look at Mark 13 a little bit tonight as well, as we talk about this, and we will be chatting through some just kind of notes and see where we end up. So here we go. So when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by the prophet Daniel standing in the holy place, let the reader understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let the one who is on the housetop not go down and take what is in his house. And let the one who is in the field not turn his back and take his cloak. But alas, for the woman who is pregnant and for those who are nursing infants in those days, pray that your flight may not be in winter or on a Sabbath. For then there will be great tribulation, such as has not been seen from the beginning of the world until now, no, and never will be. And if those days had not been cut short, no human being would be saved. But for the sake of the elect, those days will be cut short. Then if anyone says to you, look, here's the Christ, There he is. Do not believe it. For false Christs and false prophets will arise and perform great signs and wonders as to lead astray, if possible, even the elect. See, I have told you beforehand. So if they say to you, look, he is in the wilderness, do not go out. If they say, look, he is in the inner rooms, do not believe it. For as lightning comes from the east and shines as far from the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. Wherever the corpses, the vultures will gather. All right, there's a lot going on here in these 13 verses. But what we get to start with is this prophecy spoken all the way back by the prophet Daniel. Now, if we remember, this is coming out of Daniel 9:27. I'm going to read that verse. It says, "And he shall make a strong covenant with many for 1 week. And for half a week he shall put an end to sacrifice and offering. And on the wing of abominations shall come the one who makes desolate until the decreed end is poured out of the desolator." All right, so here's what we get. Now, as this prophecy was given to Daniel, there have been several times in the Jewish history that it was thought of that this prophecy was going to be fulfilled. Most notably is in the writing of the Maccabees. It was ordered by this king that the altar of the Greek god Zeus be constructed in the temple, and this is around 167 BC. He also decreed that swine and other unclean animals were to be sacrificed there, and that the Sabbath was to be profaned, and that circumcision was to be abolished. But Jesus clarifies the completion of the fulfillment of Daniel's prophecy would be found in another time. So here is what is happening, right? Throughout the time of history, from the Old Testament until the time of Christ, Jews feared this prophecy that somebody would come into their temple and desecrate it. And they feared on a few levels here, right? Somebody that was not a Jew, was not a person that was a priest trained to enter into the Holy of Holies, would come in and sit on the throne of God. So to paint this picture, we have to, and I'm not going to dig too deep into it, but I'm going to kind of hopefully give you a high level view of it. But if you go back to Leviticus and start looking at how the order of the priesthood was built, you'll see, you know, all of this, all of these rules and order that God gave to Moses and Aaron on temple worship and temple ordination and how priests and everybody were to be trained, what garments they were to wear, and who they could be, and all of this such. And so from that point in history all the way through, the Jewish priests had strict rules on who was allowed to enter into the Holy of Holies. This was the temple where God's Spirit resided. And the fear of the Jewish people after this prophecy was given by Daniel was that when they were under threat by, you know, another nation, that this would be it. This is the time that, you know, this Antichrist or this anti-God would come in, because they didn't have Christ at this moment. This anti-God would come in and desecrate the temple. And they, you know, they would say that this abomination would come in and sit on the throne of God and declare himself to be God of some fashion. And by doing so, would order, you know, as it's noted here, order these unclean animals, these pigs and all of this other sort to come in and be sacrificed. They would dismiss the Sabbath day worship. They would stop circumcision for the Jewish men, because they knew that that was something that they clung to as a righteous manner. They would essentially try to flip the Jewish mindset upside down and do everything in contradiction to that. And so throughout history, the Jewish people were really looking at this deeply. They were really fearful of this moment. And, you know, as I mentioned, that there were several times that they thought this prophecy would be fulfilled. And especially here, as the Maccabees were written, Antiochus was this king that had ordered this temple to be constructed for for Zeus, the Greek god, and actually not just the temple, but an altar in the temple, the Jewish temple. So they would take the altar of God and get rid of it and put a Greek god altar in this temple so they can come and worship Zeus there. So the Jewish people had, you know, thought in this moment, well, here it is. Here's this prophecy being fulfilled. But then here comes along Jesus and says, no, see, that's not right. What Daniel was actually speaking of is something completely different. Daniel's actually talking about what's going to happen in a few short years after he leaves. Daniel's pointing to the destruction of the temple in 70 AD by the Roman Empire. And then this picture of the Antichrist is being set up in the last days. Here's another little study note here from Mark 13, looking at the 14th verse in that chapter. This repeats the prophecy recorded in Daniel 9:27 about the desecration of the temple under Antiochus. Jesus announces a new desolation and destruction of the Jewish temple, which will be carried out by the Romans in 70 AD. This event will end all worship, temple worship, and sacrifice, but these desolations are but a taste of what lies in the future, as this is also pointed to 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 3 through 4, and I'll read that. Let no one deceive you in any way, for that day will not come unless the rebellion comes first, and the man of lawlessness is revealed, the son of destruction, who opposes and exalts himself against every so-called God or object of worship, so that he takes a seat in the temple of God, proclaiming himself to be God. See, that was what the fear of the Jews were, that somebody would sit on this throne. But we know that the prophet Daniel was pointing to something down the way. And Jesus had actually was even saying, now the temple's going to be destroyed. We're looking at something even greater to come. And we're also pointed to Revelation 13 as a tie-in. This calls for wisdom. Let no one who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. And that is a point reference there to the Antichrist. But here's the thing. Jesus is pointing to the destruction of the temple. Again, he's clarifying Daniel's prophecy, but he kind of separates the abomination, right? He's separating the Antichrist, because Paul's referencing here in 2 Thessalonians and John's reference in Revelation 13 both indicate a different type of scenario, one that will be seated on a new temple. And so here's the thought process that runs through some dispensationalist mind, and I'm going to kind of, you know, we're going to walk through what they kind of believe. So Jesus's prophecy to destroy the temple in 70 AD is fulfilled. So in the dispensationalist mindset, they are looking at the reconstruction of a third Jewish temple. And when that happens, that is like their tipping point for the end of times to kind of start. Once the construction begins, that's like, okay, here we go. We're the clock starts ticking. Now, from other interpretations, you know, an amillennialist or a postmillennialist, we don't really care about a third temple. We don't, whether it gets built or not, it doesn't have any effect in our eschatological perspective. We don't, you know, gets built, great. It does not signify anything for us. Now, you know, it could have significance because it does start to play into what scripture has prophesied for us. But in reality, it's just another piece of God's redemptive plan coming to either, you know, a close or a beginning, if you would. With this temple, Paul's writing and John's writing that this Antichrist will sit on the throne and declare himself to be God. And that's what Paul writes about here in 2 Thessalonians. And so he takes his seat in the temple of God, proclaiming himself to be God. And Revelation 13 is the second tie-in, saying that he will have this particular mark, and that will be, you know, 666. So I kind of want to read here a little bit on the desolation that R.C. Sproul has in his book, and then we'll continue on in some of these verses and see where it takes us. R.C. writes, "This segment of the discourse is widely understood today to refer to an event that has not yet transpired, an event popularly described as the Great Tribulation. It has also given rise to a multitude of interpretations, particularly within the dispensational theology regarding the time of the rapture. Whether it is before the tribulation, in the middle, or after it, we will examine the question of the rapture later. For the present, we merely note in passing with a host of controversial eschatological theories come to play with respect to this text. The preterist view includes the tribulation and the abomination of desolation with the signs that take place prior to the destruction of Jerusalem. No argument is required to prove the strict and exclusive reference of this section to Jerusalem and Judea, Russell contends. Here we can detect no trace of a double meaning, or primary or ulterior fulfillments, or underlining in typical senses. Everything is natural, local, and near. The land is the land of Judea. This people is a people of Israel, and this time is the lifetime of the disciples, when ye therefore shall see." Russell goes on to argue for a first century fulfillment of this prophecy. Most expositors find an allusion to the standards of the Roman legions in the expression, "the abomination of desolation," and the explanation is highly probable. The eagles were the objects of religious worship for the soldiers, and the parallel passage in St. Luke is all but conclusive evidence that this is the true meaning. We know that from Josephus that the attempt of a Roman general, Vitulus, in the reign of Tiberius, to march troops through Judea was resisted by Jewish authorities on the ground that idolatrous images on their ensigns would profane the law. So really what we're getting here, right, is just kind of a high view of what R.C.'s writing. And he's got some excerpts here he pulls from John Calvin, as John writes on this text, "Because the destruction of the temple and the city of Jerusalem, together with the overthrow of the whole Jewish government, was, as we already have said, a thing incredible. And because it might be a thought strange that the disciples could not be saved without being torn from that nation, to which have been committed the adoption of the covenant, Romans 9:4, of eternal salvation, Christ confirms both by the testimony of Daniel, as he have said, that you may not be too strongly attached to the temple and to the ceremonies of the law. God has limited them to a fixed time, and has long ago declared that the Redeemer should come, sacrifices would cease, and it may go, and that may not give you uneasiness to cut off from your own nation. God has forewarned his people that in due time it would be rejected." So Russell continues here. He maintains, Russell then comments on the following portion of Matthew's text. "Then if anyone says to you, 'Look, here's the Christ,' or 'There,' do not believe it, for false Christs and false prophets will arise and show great signs and wonders so as to deceive, if possible, even the elect." So he goes on to write here over this particular text. But let's kind of focus a little bit here on these few verses, because I really want to hammer home up until, I mean, let's look at 15 and 16 really quick here, because we're going to get a couple trains of thoughts, and then we're going to kind of shift the mindset just a little bit, because Jesus has given us a few things to really hammer on. First is this abomination, right? We've already noted that this is a lawless man. He is the Antichrist, or a Antichrist, because depending on what hermeneutic and what eschatological position you hold, throughout history, there are many Antichrists that have arisen and have brought war against the Jewish and Christian nations. So this is one who will physically go into the Jewish temple and sit on the throne and declare himself God. This was a fulfillment, or this will be a fulfillment to the prophecy that Daniel gives. Now, the prophecy that Daniel gives is essentially twofold, and one that the temple is destroyed, that Jesus is declaring here, going all the way back to beginning verses in 24, and now again here in 15. And he is standing here in this holy place, right? The Holy of Holies. So this is, that's the piece that Jesus is warning us about. Let's rewind just a little bit more. This is all coming into light with what we said last week on the show. We will see false Christ come up. We will see wars and hear rumors of wars. And we will see all of these famines and earthquakes. And people will deceive one another and betray one another. And the gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed, I'm paraphrasing these verses, throughout the whole world as a testimony to all nations. And then the end will come. We talked a lot about verse 14. So if you want to curious about that, go listen to last week's episode. But as we continue this thought, this isn't a separate piece of text. This isn't a different chapter, a different time frame. This is a continual thing. This is Jesus concludes one word, goes right into the next. Jesus is telling us here that this will take place at some point. But he makes this little quote, let the reader understand. When this happens, he's telling you that those who are in Judea are to flee to the mountains. Again, this isn't a prophet. It's kind of difficult to really pin this out because the interpretations from the different things that I've read pin this in an abstract way. It's the destruction of the temple. And so Jesus is forewarning the disciples and those in Judea to flee to the mountains when the Romans come. And when the Romans come, the nation of Israel is essentially scattered into the world. And so they did meet in these mountain cities, and they did try to go into smaller communities that were Jewish communities and try to reconstruct the Pharisaical order. So there's a lot of history outside of these few verses here. I would advise you, if you're really a history buff, grab 2000 Years of Christ's Power, just the first volume, the first 30 or 40 pages talk about this particular time period from a non-biased perspective. It doesn't talk anything about eschatological views. It's strictly giving you a historical, this is what really happened here. And so we know that the Romans came in, they, took over Jerusalem, they destroyed the temple, the Jewish people fled. Some of the Pharisaical circles, like the Sadducees, were destroyed, but they reconstructed that when they, fled Jerusalem. Another topic. But Jesus is saying, when you see this, let them go to the mountains, flee, get out. Don't let the one who's on the housetop not go down and take what is in his house. Get out of the area. If you're in the field, don't go back for your cloak. Get out, go to the mountains, flee, because judgment is coming. And he talks a little bit about here in verse 19, that alas for a woman who is pregnant and those who are nursing infants in those days, pray that your flight may not be in the winter or on a Sabbath. So let's look at some study notes here, right? Flee to the mountains, ancient church historian Eusebius reports that during the Jewish revolt in AD 67, Jesus's warning was fulfilled when Christians fled to the mountains of Pella, and this is found in the Eusebius Eschatological History, Volume 3. And as I mentioned that when this happened, there would have been no time, because it would have been very swift. So there was no time to go and gather provisions, and they should be praying for that the harshest conditions and the most revered tribulations not be a hindrance to fleeing. And so that's what he's referencing here in verses 19 and 20, not to encounter such heavy and terrible seasons to keep them from fleeing and allow them to get away cleanly, essentially, right? So let's do, I'm going to bring up a couple other notes because I really want to ensure that we are clear on this. In verses 17 through 19, Jesus warns that the inhabitants of Judea will be extremely rushed when they are forced to flee by the attacking Roman legions. This began, as I mentioned, in AD 67. There will not be time for gathering the prized possessions or even grabbing a coat. And violating the day of rest by fleeing would have been permissible. So that's, you know, a warning here that Jesus is giving here that, you know, pray that it's not during the middle of winter or on a Sabbath. But if you're, you know, according to the Jewish law there, if you were fleeing, you know, an incoming battle, fleeing on the Sabbath would have been permissible. Obviously, Jesus isn't saying that, you know, you can't flee on the Sabbath. That would be a misrepresentation of the text. But what he's saying is pray that you may not be caught in the middle of winter or on the Sabbath, because the people in this time frame had such a strict view of the Sabbath that they probably would not. They would probably sit there and go, I can't do anything. I would be in violation of God's law. And so he's like, well, if that's the case, then hopefully it happens on a Monday for you, you know, because it's like breaking that mindset that these people held on to themselves for so very long. And he says, in this time period, there will be great tribulation. Such has not been from the beginning of the world until now, no, and never will be. Verse 21 is an interesting verse. These days leading up to Jerusalem's destruction would be unprecedented in the intensity of suffering, and it would require extraordinary means of survival. So he's not saying anything about the end of times or anything of that such. He's simply pointing to the destruction of Jerusalem. Funny enough, these verses often are taken and placed into the end of times, the second coming of Jesus, because they sound just like that. You know, if you were to take and put this into a dispensationalist mindset, you could really say, well, with the rising of the third temple after Daniel's 70th week, the abomination is going to come in, sit on the throne, declare himself God, and then all hell is going to break loose. And destruction is going to come. May the Christians flee to the mountains. It'll come swift. And hopefully you're not pregnant or nursing children, because you're going to get swept up in that persecution. It's very easy, right? If you just kind of take that and just bend it just a little and, you know, kind of twist it a little and squeeze it down into that little gap of view. But what we're trying to do is understand the greater context here. And what we're trying to teach on this show is that not all eschatological events point us strictly to the end of the world. They point us to something that Jesus is ending, whether it be Jerusalem and the views of the Jewish people. And I really like here, and I read, I think RC wrote it back here, that this had to have happened in order for the Jewish people to have, or the, not the Jewish people, but the apostles to break it, their hold on, you know, the Jewish temple. Because they literally, early in 24, they are in awe of the temple. They are marveling at the temple. And so Jesus is saying, I'm going to raise it to the ground. And I'm going to demolish all of this. Anything that you think is right, I'm ending it. And his whole perspective in this entire section thus far is on the destruction of the temple and destruction of Jerusalem. Because, see, they were so... Even the apostles were still kind of caught up in that legalistic mindset. They were still caught up in the pharmaceutical ways. And the Pharisees had such a grip on people that those people who would follow and listen to the teachings of Jesus were captivated still yet by the Jewish law. And Jesus is saying, I'm going to shatter all of that so my gospel can go into the world and reach the people it needs to reach. And That is what we're getting so far. And so it is easy to take these texts and manipulate them and twist them. But at the end of the day, we have to understand what it is Christ is actually telling us. And if those days had not been cut short, no human would be saved. But for the sake of the elect, those days will be cut short. 22 again, it's an interesting verse. Some suggest that this means that God's wrath will continue unchecked against the wickedness of humanity and no one would survive the eventual destruction. Others see it as a reference to cutting short of either the 7th week or 70th week of Daniel from Daniel 9 or the 42 months of Revelation 11:2. It is evident that the reference is not to the destruction of Jerusalem, since the unprecedented destruction described in Matthew 24:21 did not take place in AD 70. The elect either includes all those who follow Christ. The elect includes all those who follow Christ during this period. So, as we see, some views, some interpretations are trying to kind of pan out how this text is laid out. And I'll tell you, for reference notes, I'm using the Last Days According to Jesus from R.C. Sproul. I've got a Reformation Bible, an ESV Study Bible, a Lutheran Study Bible, and then I have my other commentaries and notes up on my screen. And so I am looking and trying to walk us through all of these views collectively and answering these verses as such. So the Lutheran Bible Study Bible puts us at 21, that these days are leading up to the destruction of Jerusalem, that in this time period in AD 67, that there was tension and, you know, skirmishes and battles that were being had leading up to the destruction. But the ESV Study Bible wants to point us that the verse 21 is actually indicating another futuristic event. The way Christ has written thus far, or has spoken thus far, and Matthew, our scribe, has written, it feels that 21 and 22 are a continual thought based upon the fleeing from the destruction of the temple. That this, even, you know, we're going to experience this tribulation. These people would experience that tribulation, and then they would have to flee. And because of the intensity of it, they've never experienced anything like the Roman Empire destroying one of their towns. And so I feel that 21 and 22 are a continual thought. And again, this is my hermeneutics. So if you disagree with me, that's perfectly okay. I accept that. You can. You're allowed to. But by just looking at this at a high level, the thought continues. He doesn't jump into a future perspective. He doesn't the verses don't translate into future tense. It doesn't change the thought or anything, but 23 does shift a little bit though. And I want to get to that here in a minute, but 21 and 22 feel and look and sound as they are a continuation of these, of this time period, this tribulation that these Jewish people will in fact experience. So as we get to 23, so we can continue on with this continual thought, but I also want to kind of use this as a, you know, this could be a possible forewarning for any sort of future event, but I still think that we are continuing the thought here because these people will have thought, okay, the temple's destroyed, Jerusalem sacked, our nation's shattered. Is this really the end of the Jewish people? Is God going to come back and take his people home? And so Jesus gives these people a warning. He says, then if anyone says to you, look, here's the Christ, or there he is, do not believe it. For false Christs and false prophets will arise and perform great signs and wonders, as to lead astray, if possible, even the elect. So what he's telling you here is when things turn desperate, people instinctively recognize the need for a spiritual answer. under such wretched conditions as found prior here with the destruction in Jerusalem, it is no wonder that false teachers would attract so many followers, even the elect. God's people, however, will not fall to charlatans. The power of God's Spirit helps believers in Jesus to remain true. So he gives them this warning, and I can see how this, as we've said earlier in prior episodes, around the false Christ and false Jesus is arising, to be vigilant on that. But here in 23, we are given a continual thought again about the destruction in Jerusalem. He's saying that there's going to be this great tribulation, and in that time period, you people will be deceived. Many will come out of the woodwork claiming to be the Christ. False teachers, false prophets will arise, and they will do all of these signs and wonders, and they will lead many astray. And they will even try to lead the elect. See, I have told you beforehand. So if they say to you, look, he's in the wilderness, do not go. If they say he's in the upper room, do not believe it. So let's stop there. So again, more warnings. Jesus is saying, I have told you beforehand. I'm going to tell you here in a minute what it's going to look like when I come back. But I am telling you this right now. People are going to come out of the woodwork. They are going to say, I am the Christ, or I can perform these signs and I have been sent by God. False teachers, false prophets. They will do all sorts of little gimmicks and magic tricks. Don't believe it. If he's in the wilderness, do not go. If he's in the upper room, do not believe it. Basically, in that sense of frame, he is saying if he's in the house or if he's in the bedroom or wherever, you know, oh, he's, you know, putting on a theater performance, whatever. He's a circus act. Do not go. Jesus starts now to transition here into what it is going to look like when the coming of man comes. For as lightning comes from the east and shines as far in the west, so will the coming of man. See, it's not going to be somebody whispering in the woods or somebody shouting on a street corner. When Christ comes, the heavens will shatter. And you will see from as far in the east as you can, from as far in the west. And every single person alive will know it. Wherever the corpse is, there the vultures will gather. False teachers will swoop down on the confused and suffering people as vultures unfailingly spot carrion and gather around it. Vultures, right? They're a predatorial bird. They swoop down and they pick up the dead animals that are on the road and, or, you know, kill small animals in the fields and stuff. And so wherever a corpse is, they will gather and eat. Wherever the confused and suffering are, wherever the despaired, wherever the lost, those people are easy prey for false teachers. Why do you think false teachers, and excuse my language here, but why do you think false teachers prey upon the elderly? Because they're easily deceived. I mean, for crying out loud, there's people on TBN selling miracle rags, prayer rags. Buy my prayer rag for $10 or $19.99 and you will be blessed. And you're, you know, or these idiot preachers telling you to sow a seed for $100 and you're going to get $1,000. Those who are ignorant are easy prey. Wherever the corpse is, wherever the dead in Christ are, or not even the dead in Christ, excuse me, wherever just the straight up dead, spiritually dead are, false teachers will lead them astray. Shocking, if you put this into light of the bigger world here, wherever the dead spiritually are, those who subscribe to a political agenda or a worldly agenda, or those who think that, you know, the universe is going to save them, or whatever their quote unquote religion of the week is, they are spiritually dead. And they are deceived by those who take advantage of their ignorance. Jesus is setting himself up here for next week's episode here, and as he sets himself up in verse 27, 29 and 30 through 31, we will see the heavens shattering. But he says here, for as lightning comes from the east and shines as far as the west, so will the coming of man. He's given us this picture of what it'll look like. Ignore the whispers in the woods. Ignore the performances and the circus acts and the people who claim that they are this and that. When you come, or when I come, you will know it. Do not be mistaken. You will know it. And that is the prophecy that we will start to get into next week as we dig into the coming of the Son of Man. And we will talk a little bit. I did preach a sermon on this. We'll talk a little bit about time framing next week, because it seems like we will go as a continual thought. But again, time framing is important as we start to unpack these verses, and we can learn that we don't have a clue when this will happen. Because as he's talking to the disciples, he's given this analogy, or he's given this picture being painted here of the destruction of Jerusalem. And you'd think that shortly after the destruction, he will come. But that's not the case. The case is, we don't know. So we will dig into that. I do want to read this little note here on these verses 15 through 28. While prophesying concerning Jerusalem's destruction, Jesus again warns his disciples about being deceived by false messiahs. During the crisis, people instinctively seek spiritual aid. In such time, God's people are tempted to join those fleeing to charlatans and false hopes they offer. Christ's return in glory, it will be unmistakable. In an instant, he will raise the dead, transform believers into his likeness, and so effect our final deliverance. You have revealed to us the manner of your return, O Lord. Therefore, keep us watchful for you, that we do not follow those who deceive us. Amen. So that is this week's episode. Sorry for the little 10-minute, 12-minute rant in the beginning, but I do want to really urge discernment on fear-mongering pages on social media. Don't subscribe to those who are warning you to live in fear and to hide, because I'll tell you what, you will be missing the glorious life that Christ has given you. You will be forsaking this gift of sharing the gospel with other believers and with other people in the world. So don't subscribe to what the fear mongers on social media do. If anything, take time off your phone, put it aside, read some books, speak to your neighbor, check in on them, show them your love, and just enjoy what the blessings that Christ has given you. Because I feel like in this day and age, it's all we can do. Doesn't matter who's the president, who the world leaders are, doesn't matter what the government's doing. What matters is, what are you doing in your community, and what are you doing to move the gospel forward into the world? So, ladies and gentlemen, that is this week's episode. Next week, I said we will be touching base on the signs of the coming of the Son of Man. Pretty quick text. There's only a few verses. We will probably go on to the lesson of the fig tree and maybe end up wrapping up chapter 24 entirely, depending on how we work through No One Knows the Day and the Hour. Because this is all kind of one big train of thought here as we wrap up. And then we've got a couple parables in chapter 25, and then the final judgment. I love that. We will probably spend a couple weeks on that maybe. And then we will conclude the Olivet Discourse, because it's pretty close concurrently as we look at the other Gospels accounts. So in a handful of weeks, we will jump into some Pauline eschatology and look at what Paul's writing about, as we kind of referenced some of his verses tonight. And then we will start our plunge into the book of Revelation. So that's kind of what is on our schedule for the coming weeks. And I hope you guys are enjoying it. By the way, I've not made this announcement yet on social media, but we will be doing something special Saturday night. It'll drop Tuesday morning. So keep your eyes open for Undying Light bonus episodes. And I'm not going to really get too much into it now, but just keep your eyes open. We're going to try a new something for the show, and we will continue to produce content. Blog articles are being written now, so probably once every other week or every week, depending on my time schedule, check those out. We'll be doing video content probably on the weekend, so check that out and make sure you subscribe, leave us your reviews, share these podcasts with other people. And that's how we grow this ministry. So again, if you want to help sponsor this, simply $1 a month gets you access to everything we do behind the scenes. And make sure you just share this out with other people. That's the greatest thing you can do to help us. And if you want Undying Light logos or Undying Light gear, check us out in my bio on Reformed Lifestyle or on Undying Light Ministries Instagram page. You can get the link to that merch page and get some hoodies and coffee mugs and sweet gear. So, and as always, everything I did tonight was done by Logos Bible Software. You can get a copy of Logos at logos.com/undying light and get yourself a sweet Bible software package that has all of this amazing content in here, all these study Bibles and commentaries and books and digital help. I literally carry this with me everywhere I go in my pocket, as I have it installed on my phone. So don't miss out on that. Logos.com/undying light. Ladies and gentlemen, that takes care of it for me. Make sure you tune in next week and check out that, as well as listen to A Matter of Truth as me and Anthony continue going through all these different topics. We will be dropping some other content as well, with drive-by episodes and that coming in January and February. We have a two-parter on sanctification that we're working through right now. We had a special guest, Janelle, on our episode that aired this past week, and we'll drop part two on January 31st. That's a Sunday, so don't miss out on that. Until next week, guys, thanks for tuning in. God bless. Love you all.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA.
TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.